From India's largest newsroom, I'm Arun George, and this is the Times of India podcast.
From the Puranas of India, it seems that in ancient India, medical science was very well developed.
Mahabharata says the same thing. 100 fertilized eggs are put into 100 earthen pots. Is it not test tube, baby?
To be very honest, yagya is the most scientific and environment-friendly Hindu ritual.
In recent times, there's been this push to make faith and rituals seem more scientific. We have yoga being linked to religious postures, scientific claims being made about rituals, and many other claims that even holy books don't make. A lot of this comes from the fact that science and religion are seen as opposite sides of a coin, and followers of both science and religion look down on the other. In today's episode, we're in conversation with author and mythologist Devdutt Patnaik about why there's this push to make faith-based stories and religious rituals seem scientific. He explains why science and faith have always been on separate planes and why faith never intended to solve some of humanity's real-world problems that science can. He also talks about the limitations of science when it comes to faith. We started by asking him how he viewed the claims that ancient religious stories are evidence of science existing in ancient times.
So Devdutt, we view stories now like the replacement of Ganesha's head, the Pushpak Vimana, and we talk of them as evidence of things like aircraft and plastic surgery. Do you view these stories as evidence of scientific practices from our time that were being implemented in ancient times, like a sort of oral history being passed now?
No, I don't think so, because, I have a little bit of intelligence. Usually what happens is that language is a very complex tool by which we communicate things. What humans can do is we can use language to communicate things that we don't experience. So we use metaphors. So I use the known to explain the unknown. So if I want to explain complex ideas to you, which I don't experience in my neighborhood, humans can talk about things that we can't see. For example, love. And I want to communicate love to you. Now, love is not visible. How do I communicate it? I use metaphors. So I say, when I see you, I feel that spring has arrived in winter. Now, that's an absurd idea, right? How can spring arrive in winter? But I've used our metaphor to communicate something to you so you understand what I'm feeling. So when somebody is telling you stories of a head being cut off and being replaced by an elephant head or a deer head or an antelope head, they are using familiar things and repositioning them in intelligent ways so that you can receive the idea behind the metaphor. That is a problem when you look at ancient literature, because since you don't know those people, you don't know what is metaphorical and what is real. If you read the Rig Veda, for example, the 9th mandala has over 100 poems describing a simple act, which is squeezing the soma and filtering it through cloth. But they explain the same ritual of just crushing something and filtering it to produce juice in over 100 different metaphors, comparing it with the mountains flying, with the sun rising, with the bull returning to the pasture. Now, you don't take it literally, you see it poetically, you see it metaphorically. So mythology uses a metaphorical idea because it's trying to communicate things that are beyond nature, more than nature. We use the word like supernatural, but it's a supernatural metaphor to communicate what is natural but invisible. That's all it is.
Having read and studied the epics, do you actually see any scientific intelligence or scientific understanding where the metaphors are being used in our epics?
It's very difficult to differentiate metaphors, especially for of texts that you're not familiar with, the people that you don't know. So because if you start believing that you are smarter than people who lived before, you start thinking they are savages and therefore they think literally, but you think metaphorically, which is how the colonial people saw the past. The fact is the science as a concept is a very new idea and it is based on evidence. People use the word science, unfortunately, in our country to mean logic and rationality. Logic and rationality rationality are different. Science is about evidence, measurement. If there is no measurable evidence, then it is not a scientific phenomena. So I can imagine flying through the air and write about it. I flew through the air. Now, if you are drunk and you have been drunk in your life, you know that you can imagine yourself doing crazy things and you can write it out. And then people will say, oh, did you really fly? Did alcohol make you fly? Or is it just your imagination creating these images? Or are you a poet writing about a possibility, thinking of yourself as flying with the birds and seeing the world differently? How do you differentiate that? How do you know that you are producing your imaginary tales, or you are under the influence of drugs, or you've actually experienced it? That's what poetry and literature is all about. And that is why people who are usually engineers, and I always observe that engineers love these crazy things about, you know, fantastic technology existed. There are videos all about it, right? Graham Hancock is famous for that.
Graham Hancock is a British writer who has multiple claims about ancient civilizations, many of which are pretty out there. Like his theory that people had telekinetic powers to move things with their minds at one time.
Maybe the idea that they regard as absurd, namely that psychic powers were cultivated by ancient civilizations, that they could use powers of the human mind that we have allowed to lapse, maybe that idea deserves further consideration.
Devdutt says it's writers like these who take metaphorical stories and try to make them literal to suit a theory.
He's a classic engineering mind who sees everything literally and is unable to understand metaphors, allegories, figures of speech. They just are not able to understand the symbolic vocabulary of things. You know, engineers are so used to seeing material things, they start imagining that the mind also functions like matter, and they confuse the mind and matter. And that's the folly of science, because science is good with material, measurable things. The mind is not material and therefore not measurable. And the science, in their smug arrogance, start believing that they can measure everything of the mind, and they start taking everything from the past literally. You know, carvings on a temple wall suddenly become magic. You see an image of a tiger with wings and they say, oh, that creature existed in the past, when without realizing that somebody can imagine a creature which has the powers of a bird and a lion. And therefore, the griffin as an idea emerges. If you go to Sanchi Stupa, you find people, human beings with wings, you find horses with wings, you find lions with wings, you find fish with the face of a goat. These animals, did they actually exist? And I think many people who are hardcore scientists who do not believe in the existence of the mental imagination of human poets start believing that is true. You know, that's what happens when you privilege science too much.
So we also have this belief that scientific developments now are a result of holy texts or are stolen from holy texts, that whatever we have now is because it was once envisioned about in a holy text. You've written about the flaws in this theory itself. Why do you say that, say, faiths can't be the basis of science?
See, there's a foundational difference between science and faith and religion. Religion is based on belief systems. You believe the teacher, you believe the guru, you believe the book. You do not ask for evidence. There is no doubt. There's no room for doubt. There is no room for evidence. Science is the opposite. You know, the Royal Society of Science defines science as nullius in verba, which means not on anyone's word, which means I don't care for the guru's testimony. I don't care what is written in texts. I'm looking, it is all based on doubt. So I doubt everything and I need evidence. And even when I get the evidence, I'll still have doubt because I'll continuously proving myself to be false. So your process of science is to continuously prove that you are wrong, you are wrong, you are wrong, and your experiments have to prove that you are right. Now, that's the very opposite of someone who is a guru's follower, because he's like, maybe he's right, maybe he's right, maybe he's right. So they're totally two opposite ways of thinking, right? Now, what happened in this world somewhere around the 17th, 18th century, that until that time, science was dominating the world and matters of faith, and everything was about matters of faith. You trust the guru, you trust the expert, you trust the king, you trust people in positions of power, your position. They will tell you, you know, what is medicine, how to live your life, how to eat, what to dress, everything. Like in a tribal society, you don't have choices. You're told this is the way it is done and you better do it. And And you do it because you follow the authority. But science is the opposite of that. It challenges and it experiments and it's constantly doubting. And this idea emerged after the Crusades when the church collapsed in Europe. And this idea of doubt being privileged is a much later idea. It's there in all societies. But the idea of measurement and evidence, this process emerged really in Europe in the about 500 years ago, and it refined itself gradually, and it helped us understand nature beautifully, material things. Pure sciences did not exist before that. What we have in the past is technology. Many people don't understand that having technology doesn't mean you understand the science. Everybody can cook food, but we don't understand what is steaming and what is the science of temperature, boiling, water, what is the chemicals involved in spices. So you don't need to understand all that in order to be a great cook. So all communities in this world have had technologies. We have had weapons, tools of various kinds. But having technology doesn't mean you understand the science. Because it's based on trial and error method. It's based on understanding patterns. These are, the new word is proto-science. We use the word for that. And every culture has a proto-science. We understand patterns. We understand how to create tools and technology. But we don't understand the science. The science really is with measuring instruments, which became better and better and better after the 15th century, which showed us things beyond the sky. We could suddenly see things beyond the sky. So we say, don't trust just your eye. We could see radiation, and we realize, you know, we never saw radiations.
So you're saying that, you know, we may have discovered fire, our forefathers, but you don't know what fire is made up of. So
that's technology is like, I always tell people, the lady who cooks, the man who cooks, whoever cooks is using the principles of physics and chemistry and biology to cook great food, to know what is healthy food, what is unhealthy food. They'll follow the pattern very nicely. But they do not understand what we know now in terms of physics and chemistry, molecular structures, what's going on. Once you understand the foundational basis of matter, you are able to create many more things. And that is how science accelerates, our knowledge accelerates. I mean, it's a very famous thing that it took us 100,000 years to move from being apes to using stone tools. It took us 10,000 years to move from farmers to the Industrial Revolution. It took only 200 years to move from the Industrial Revolution to the Digital Revolution. So you suddenly see it's accelerating, because as science knowledge increases, our technology accelerates. But science has become so dramatic and glamorous because, you know, science started solving real problems. Like antibiotics could solve infections. You suddenly had, weapons that could fire far away. And science suddenly said, I'm more important than religion. Right? And that is what happened in the 18th and 19th century. Science said that I can replace religion. It became a rival to religion. Until the 19th century, science was not a rival to religion. Early scientists were all Christians. And even before that, the earliest scientists were Muslims, and then somewhere Islam abandoned science, but science thrived in Europe. And therefore, Europe has the privilege of bringing scientific ideas. India had a lot of smart people, but, you know, because of our caste system, all knowledge was locked within families. And therefore, it didn't get the kind of a critical mass required for the knowledge to reach a higher level. Otherwise, I guess India would have perhaps risen. So, you know, science in Europe really became a rival to religion. And because Europe colonized the world, around the world, they are seen as enemies of each other, when really they serve totally different purposes. They are not rivals. They are working on totally two different dimensions.
So, given that they do operate on these parallel planes, then should faiths be trying to establish themselves as scientific? And we have a lot of this now, especially on social media, where you try and justify every ritual as saying that, you know, actually, if you think of it, if I do this, it's actually a scientific thing.
It's because our brain is too small to accept two parallel ideas. I keep saying we have a left brain and a right brain for a reason. Nature wants us to have two conflicting ideas so that in the tension of the conflicting ideas, something nice will emerge. When you suppress one part of the brain and the other part gets over-dominant, then you become very foolish. And that's what is happening, you know, because you want the hegemony either of science or religion. It's always either or. My religion did everything. So it is like I am Sarva Guna Sampanna. I solve everything. But because there's tension, you'll have see the tension manifesting in social media with people saying that science is religion, religion is science, one group. The other saying that they are very different. A third group saying that only religion matters or only science matters.
I wanted to get a sense from you whether you think we have lost some wisdom along the way. We do know that we have made scientific discoveries, whether they were in the fold of religion or dark arts or whatever. Do you think that there are our own secrets that we haven't been able to unlock?
See, the religious books were never written to explain scientific ideas. They were written to help us live decent human lives. So the purpose of religion is not to present to you a scientific fact. The purpose of religion is to give you meaning and to give your life meaning. So ideas like God, rebirth, soul are dealing with life issues. They are life coaches. Purpose of science is not to coach you to live your life. So they're totally different books. So you can't go to a book which says, I'm going to help you and expect to understand Newton's laws. And you can't go to a science textbook section and expect it to solve your emotional issues and your love life. So I think people are going to the wrong department and asking the wrong question. And then the department is being blamed for not giving the right answer. The world for the last 300 years is dominated by monotheistic principles. And I think this is a pushback against the idea of monotheism. And our discomfort with dialogue is the reason why we are now loving echo chambers. So at a foundational level, if you ask me what is going on, I will say that we are seeing what we call colonization and religion. What we mean is a mono truism, one truth. I don't want to use a monotheism, but the idea that there is one truth, like singularity, this whole idea of singularity, one thing, it doesn't work for, 7 billion people on the planet. And I think that is one thing we need to understand. Our ancient texts did not bother with science. They were not interested. They were bothered with suffering. That's what Buddha said. I want to reduce the problem of suffering. He was not trying to break an atom.
In recent times, we have seen our own state look more towards, in terms of health, look at practices that they say were more ancient to our culture. Do you find that that we are likely to come through a breakthrough from there into something that may have been a skill or a way of a point of view which we once may have possessed?
Many people believe there were Brahmastras in the Vedas. And I've always asked, why were these Brahmastras not used against invaders? And then it becomes a circular question because they'll say invaders destroyed the holy texts. But I said, before they invaded, when we knew the Brahmastra, why did we not defeat the invaders with these magical weapons? With those magical weapons, why did we not prevent tuberculosis or infant mortality rate? We didn't measure infant mortality. We didn't measure maternal mortality. So we don't really know whether these tablets existed. It is science that made us aware of the widespread infant and maternal mortality rates. So we can imagine that holy texts answer questions. And I'm sure there is many little things out there, but we are looking for it as a cornucopia for all answers. And we're seeing it as a competition. It's also because science has this contemptuous approach towards anything which is not scientific. You can see in internet, some of the people who talk on science, they talk like religious missionaries who reject all other forms of, because they don't realize they all serve very different function. They act very, very differently. We don't know everything about how nature functions. We are not willing to accommodate other. This is combative approach that we are having. I feel everything has its place, and if you keep them alive, like the left and right brain, we will figure out a decision that will work maybe today, but may not work tomorrow. Why does your God have to be the only God in the temple? And scientists are really behaving like missionaries of ancient times who burnt people who didn't believe in their God. And that's the tragedy.
Today's episode was produced by Jairaj Singh and Sahil Gupta. for a daily spotlight on people, ideas and stories that matter, subscribe to us. We're available on TOI Plus, Spotify, Apple, Google Podcasts and all other platforms of your choice. For any news tips, email us at toipodcast@timesinternet.in.